Welcome to Ever Beyond. Beyond. On Wolf Spirit Radio, Ever Beyond Radio, and Tir na Sao in Ireland. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond. Please join us in the chat room at www.wolfspiritradio.com/listen. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Yes, you are. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. This is JP here, broadcasting from my little 16th century stone cottage in Scotland on a farm. Yes, but it doesn't matter because I've still got the studio mic. So it doesn't matter where I am, it still means I sound great. Anyway, good afternoon, everybody, and good evening, and good morning if you're listening from the Antipodes. Is there any maintenance we need to do? Yeah, we've been under attack last couple of weeks. You know, everybody in the alternative media movement has been... Well, many websites have been taken down, YouTube channels have been closed, copyright infringement agreements, you know, copyright infringement claims sent down, and, you know, basically trying to disempower people in the alternative movement. So, to that end, we were knocked out twice. Twice I've created recreated the site from the ground upwards, which is why it's a little bit ropey at the moment. I haven't had that much time to work on it, but when I do, it will come back and it will kind of look more or less like it used to. We're certainly going to keep the color schemes and the graphics, and there might be some slight font changes or something like that. But anyway, so our website was taken down twice. Our stream was attacked several times. I mean, it's always knocked out on Skype and everything. Skype, in fact, is quite useless anyway. So you might think you're under attack. It's actually just Skype being useless. So, with all those things, if you come to the Wolf Spirit Radio website, you'll come to the temporary listen site, where you'll be able to find the chat room, and it's at wolfspiritradio.com/listen, or indeed listen chat, because they point to the same place. So, if you're in the chat room already, and I see there's a nice, goodly number of people there, and welcome everybody. Howdy, everybody. Howdy, Dolly. Howdy, Wolf Baby. We have Christina, Dolly, Old Ones, Rafana, Red Lyra, Bright Eyes, Nancy, Wolf Baby, me, Daryl Berry. And that is who, indeed, my guest is tonight. So, I had Daryl on a few months ago. He was on the... Monday show, Journeys with JP, we had some very interesting conversations. And then after that, on a subsequent weekend, I hooked up with him, and we went on a journey with some of his group. And maybe we'll talk about that a little bit, because that was quite an interesting situation. And perhaps indeed we may even be able to do some journeying tonight. So, all that said, good evening and good afternoon. Good afternoon, Daryl. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Excellent. So, you're on the East Coast, aren't you?
That's right. Yeah. Not necessarily on the coast. Yeah. I'm in Kentucky. So I guess it's definitely in the Eastern time zone, but a bit more central.
Yeah.
I guess you could say the west side of the East Coast.
There we go. And we do, in fact, have an Australia giving us a wave. So g'day and waves from, right, I hope the surf is high in the in the waves. So, yeah, so this is great. Daryl, we were just going to check everything's running tickety-boo. Good. We were talking about, you know, some of the things we can discuss. And the last show was, in fact, it was about two people from who were basically brought up in the military-industrial complex. So they saw, they experienced a lot of pretty horrendous stuff, but including abductions and MyLabs, which are two different things. And you know, one of the things we discussed on our last show was, you know, why do people get MyLabbed? So, for the benefit of our audience, do you want to go into, you're not from the military-industrial complex, you're an experiencer, and maybe you could also talk about, like, pre-birth, kind of pre-incarnational agreements and things like that that people go into. So there is your bed of, here's your plate of smorgasbord topics that you can pick and choose from. And Daryl Berry, good afternoon.
Certainly. I've actually recently started reading the book. There's a book that's put out called My Labs. I could take a look and see. But, you know, apparently, and I'll approach this from two different levels, right? On one level, apparently, we have this group of people that we call government, and both to sort of control the extraterrestrial agenda, as well as just to control the population. So, as well as to, you know, they started abducting people themselves and doing various experiments on them with the intention of making the person think it was an alien. So, you know, sometimes it's a person that has already been abducted to try to get information from them. And sometimes it's just to try to sort of input their spin on what they want the alien topic to be to control the information of people. So from that sense, it's really no different than anything else that's been going on with government, which brings us to the second level. You know, the fact is nothing happens on the planet that we don't all agree to on some level, and we'll tie this into the preordination, our self-preordination as well in a moment. Nothing happens here on the planet that we don't all agree to. So, you know, an analogy that I love to give is an analogy of a boat. You know, we have 100% of the people on the planet, and the meme today is there's the 2%. You know, I think it was 1% at one point, but now it's the 2%, the 1 or 2% that's like beating the 98% of us over the head, you know, with money and corporatism and governmentism and secret governmentism and all this other good stuff. Well, if you have a boat and you have two people out of these 100 people in this long rowboat, two people wanting to row everyone off a cliff to their death, what do you think those two people can do if 98 people decide to row in a different direction?
Well,
can't do anything. We
got an idea. It's pretty obvious what would happen.
That's right. They can't do anything. They can't do anything if 98 people decide to row in another direction. So what we really have here on planet Earth, with MyLabs and contrails and false flag attacks and police state and any kind of stuff that people point to make us the victim of this small group of people called government, what we have is the whole of humanity deciding to choose a perspective, a paradigm of separation. I'm going to delve into this in detail. I have another book coming out next year called Next Density, where we talk about the fourth density paradigm. Well, the fourth density paradigm is one of oneness, one of integration, one of self-responsibility, right? So if we have a small group of people who are abducting their own citizens, that can all be stopped if we all amongst ourselves, united amongst ourselves, as one people, not as Democrats and Republicans or you know, United States versus Australia or all the different demarcations we make, Christians versus Muslim. If we just recognize that we're one people and unite, and then You know, when Joe down the street goes missing, we say, what happened to Joe? And we all paying attention. Hold on, what's going on here? And we see some shady people picking up Joe. We could be there to help. But, you know, what happens now is, like, I remember there's this guy named Schaefer Cox. And, you know, he's a guy in America who was speaking up for liberty and truth. You know, the kind of stuff that America's supposed to be about. And what happened is, the group of people who call themselves the FBI, a few people from them infiltrated he had this militia group that's based upon, like, defending themselves against tyranny, ironically. And the FBI people infiltrated this group and tried to get him to, agree to, like, go kidnap judges and stuff like that. Oh, let's look what these people are doing. Let's go kidnap him and hold him for ransom and all kind of crazy stuff. He was like, no, I'm not about that. We're about freedom and liberty and peace. And they kept trying to get him to agree to commit these crimes, which he wouldn't do. But in the end, when he didn't want to do it, they still just picked him up and charged him for the crimes that they tried to get him to commit. All the evidence, all the recordings that they had of him, in other words, they recorded trying to get him to say he was going to commit these crimes. And then I imagine if he said he was going to do it, they had to cut it up and just say to him, had him saying he was going to do it. But all they had was recordings of themselves trying to get him to commit the crimes. They didn't allow that to be admitted into evidence. I mean, it was just a whole bunch of nonsense, and now he's sitting in jail. He had a 3,000 or 4,000 person militia, and they did nothing. So the story of Schaefer Cox is not really the story of a small group of people called the FBI and the government who falsely incriminated him and then falsely put him in jail. It's a story of all of us who sitting around watching it happen and doing nothing. So that's what the story of My Labs are as well. The story of My Labs is the story of the human population on Earth all deciding to invest in separation, attack, and that's what happens, you know. So the same thing that happens with the MyLab government group bullying people, you see the same thing happening in schools where little kids bully little kids, so sometimes to the point of them committing suicide. So, you know, as I start to progress and I start to realize and I start to really within myself want a different world, I start to step away from any kind of perspective of victimization. So the MyLab thing, yes, it's going on, but we're not victims. We're experiencing the world that we choose to experience. If you look at the idea of government, it's a group of people that governs everyone else. What does it mean to govern? It means to control, right? To decide for. So we can't be upset when we decide we're so what's the word, you know, I can't think of a solid word for it, but people say, you know, if we didn't have government, you know, people would be robbing and killing and murdering and raping. So we need government to keep us safe, right?
You see, this is the interesting thing. They call that mob rule, but actually the mob rule is what we've got because we're being ruled by the mob. The mafia, you know, in general.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
We just make an official mob to rule us.
Yeah, well,
and then they murder
the mob has infiltrated the government. But anyway, come.
Exactly. So we're getting what we choose. So the moment we decide to change our paradigm, then we'll have a different world. And again, it goes back to what you were saying about predestination. I remember sometime when I was a kid or back in the day, I had a memory where, you know, suddenly I was sitting with a being. And, you know, I looked at the being and the being was looking at me and he directed my attention to this screen. And I can't really describe the environment. It was like, it was just an area. And it was as if a screen was coming out of the surface that we were on. Whatever, you know, the environment was vague, but what was clear was this screen and this being next to me. And I looked at the screen and I was seeing my life play out. I was seeing everything that's happening right now play out. So I was literally looking at my entire life as if I was looking at a movie. And I looked at the being and I was like, that's what I'm going to be doing? He's like, yep, that's you. That's your life that you're about to get into. You know, and that's everyone. Everyone here is experiencing a drama that we all agree to participate in. And part of our transition from third density to fourth density is the recognition of that. And it brings a totally new dynamic to the way that we live. So, for instance, when you're going to societies like the Sasani, or societies like the Pleiadians, they know that they're the prime doer of their life. So if something happens and they become angry, they don't project that out and blame the anger on something outside of them. They recognize that the anger they feel within themselves is a choice that they made within themselves, regardless of what the other person did, which allows them to be self-responsible. Which means, if you was to take all our government, right? If you was to take let's say all these big bad people that's doing the MyLabs, if you was to take the FBI and the CIA and the military and all this stuff, and take all these people and transplant them onto a Pleiadian planet, they wouldn't last a day. They would not last a day. And the Pleiadians, their planets generally have a smaller population than we do. The government, the tyrannous government, would not last a day. They just would not let it happen. What are you people doing? You're going to stop or you're going to leave? We're the government. You need to listen to us. No. I'm a sentient being. You're a sentient being. We're equal. I don't do what you say. I do what my internal connection to the divine directs me to say. So you have no power here. So either you're going to stop doing what you're doing, or we're going to boot you away. So this is not going to happen. It would be very simple. So we all have the power to do that right now. So when you talk about MyLabs, all of this stuff, that's what we all choosing to happen. Way that I can be the innocent victim without having someone to victimize me. So we all decide to have this government and let them victimize us. And all it is feeding into the same dichotomy and the same victimization to say, oh, the MyLabs and the government is doing this, they're so bad and they're so evil. Well, why are you letting them do it? You know, why are you pretending that these people have such great power when they're just human beings just like us? They're just people. You know, well, they have guns. Well, why are we making guns and giving it to them and letting them tell us you can't have guns? I mean, we're just doing a whole bunch of stuff that makes no sense. But there's a method to our madness. It's so that we can have this situation of victimization. It on them and say, yes, I'm a powerless victim and they're hurting me. And then they can say, yes, we are the powerful rulers and we're in control. Look how powerful we are. Just a whole game that we're all playing. So, you know, what I'm focusing on doing is just looking at my own investment in victimization, looking at how I don't allow people to have their freedom. So, for instance, as we start to become aware of these things, one of the great ideas people have is we have to reach a critical mass. Let's reach a critical mass, and once we reach a critical mass, then you know, everybody else should just come along with us, and then we'll have a new world. Well, look at how tyrannous that is. What if that one person wants to be a victim, wants to have some third density world? So we're just going to reach a critical mass and pull that person along, whatever they want to experience. So what you have is you have these loving ladders who are just as tyrannous as the people who are in tyranny now. And that's why every single revolution ends up being just as tyrannous as the people they revolted against. You know, America revolted against the crown to have freedom, and now they're even more tyrannous than they ever were. Not only in America, but all across the planet. They're running around blowing people up and taking people's resources and running false flags and just a whole bunch of craziness, you know, ousting people's governments and putting their puppet government in. And it's just a whole bunch of craziness going on by this group of people founded upon another group of people that was supposed to be bringing freedom. And I believe that the original people had a very sincere ideology, but look at what it evolved into. So, we're never going to have freedom and liberty until each individual person recognizes their power, recognizes that they're the prime chooser and choose differently and allow other people to choose what they want to choose. And the way the universe is structured, everyone has the opportunity to experience what they want. We don't have to have a critical mass and carry this person along who doesn't want to go. There's enough alternate timelines where everybody can experience exactly what they want to experience. So if you don't like the reality in which MyLabs have, and what you need to do, first of all, is look within yourself and see where you are, my lab person. What I mean by that is, where in your life do you not allow people to have their freedom? Where in your life do you try to manipulate someone to give you what you want? or you try to get what you want from someone without caring about that person or the effect that you're taking will have on them. You know, where do you, in your life,
excellent,
in content, do what they do?
Excellent questions. Excellent question, because this, I mean, this is part of how we integrate the whole world, and we integrate our whole selves. Now, I'd like to just jump in because you brought up a few points, and a couple of things that actually, you know, my in conversation with my spirit guides, one of the things that they were telling me last night even was the idea of disclosure. Is the idea that we are, you know, many people think, oh, disclosure, you know, that's when Obama comes on the TV and tells us, yes, we've had contract with ETs. That's not it. That's what she was saying is that it was very much more a continuity of consciousness in every person's life. So it's like we've been mylabbed and flashed so that we don't remember. And disclosure means that we do start to remember all these things.
Very good point. Very good point. So, like, the old way of disclosure is a manifestation of the third density of separation. You know, in other words, I don't have the power to just find out on my own, and the word, my word, and your word is not valid, even though you said you had the experience. I need the government to tell me, and then I will believe, then I will accept, right? And then we get mad when they, you know, want to withhold other stuff from us, and want to control us. Well, we're deciding that they have the controlling power. You know, anybody who wants to know that extraterrestrial life is real can know. You know, all you have to do is send out your thoughts that you want to have contact, and you will have contact. And without even doing that, I mean, there's the Phoenix Lights incident, where this 1 to 2 mile wide craft flew over the entire state of Arizona. Even the governor at the time saw it. You know, at the time, of course, he did his politician thing. It's amazing how we still give these people credence when they lie to us repeatedly. But when he was the governor, he denied it, and he even made fun of it publicly. But after he was out of office, he came publicly and said he did see the craft, and he certainly was an ET craft. You know, there's videos of the craft, and I mean, there's sightings and sightings upon sightings. So anybody who wants to know can know. So the reason why people focus on the idea of when the government tells me I'll believe it is simply because they don't want to know, as you were saying. You know, there's a repression of information within their own being, and we project that out and say the government is hiding it, or we project it out and say I don't know, and when the government tells me I will know. So you're exactly right. Disclosure is really accepting it within yourself. So I don't need the government to disclose anything to me. I've seen the ETs, and I know for a fact that when I want to see them, I can. And that's what that video was about. I sent you before, a month or two or three, I don't remember how long ago, but I started seeking out for people to have a research study. I had a research study on OBEs years ago where I taught people how to OBE as a group. And I was like, you know, I've had a lot of contact myself, so let me teach a group of people how to have contact. And a lot of people signed up for this little site saying they were interested in having contact like this map. Almost nobody wanted to join. One person joined later, but it was just me. So I was like, well, I have contact myself then again. So what happened is I had an out-of-body experience where I got on the craft. And, you know, I became aware in this sort of area. Let's say you could describe it as a sort of field. There was other people there. And, you know, this craft came down. It was like oval shaped or spherical shaped. And, a door opened up and a being was there and inviting us onto the craft. Nobody else wanted to go, but I got on the craft. And I was a bit hesitant myself because I was like, oh, you know, I want to write some books and add some things I was doing on the planet. But, you know, I've decided within myself that, you know, I want to live in a fourth density society. And if the people here are not choosing to have that, and if my own choice is not shifting me to an alternate reality fast enough, if I can, I will get on one of these ET crafts and not come back. And I told one of my friends, I said, you know, I'm starting to make contact again. I know I'm going to have contact again soon. If I get on the craft, if I can, I'll do a flyby by you. So I got on this craft, and the interesting thing is, we could talk about altered states later. I've just been starting to get back into practice for about 4 or 5 months now. This experience happened a few months ago. So, you know, my awareness is starting to get there again, but it's still not complete. So, the next day, I remember getting on the craft. I remember the craft taking off, and I didn't remember anything. And I was telling somebody on the previous radio show I was on a few weeks ago or a month ago that, you know, I don't remember anything after the craft lifted off. But then I decided to go look at my journals. And when I got back, I immediately made a lot of journal entries that I totally forgot about. And I was reading through my journals. I remember being on the craft. I remember seeing the beings. It was some bluish type beings, very, very, energy based. Apparently we was on the craft. We flew through the solar system a bit. And, you know, but a lot of my memory is a lot of vague. I'm pretty sure a lot of that memory is skewed because I still have to clear some things up. But I woke up the next day. I'm like, they brought me back. They didn't let me stay or whatever. I guess I have some more work to do. But I'm still able to get on the craft and go for a little spin. And the next day, my friend called me up and he said, Darryl, I'm surprised you answered. I thought I wasn't going to see you again. I thought when I saw the craft that you was letting me know that you wasn't going to be here, that you was doing your flyby thing. I was like, what do you mean? He was like, this craft was outside of my work and I got it on video. And I asked him, I said, well, what did the craft look like? He said it looked like a sphere. You know, and that's the video I sent you right there. So it's like, awesome. You know, so I asked him, you know, make sure, I'm like, well, you know, how did the craft move? What did the craft do? And he said, you know, how did the craft leave? I asked him. And he said, you know, the craft was hovering there for a while. I got it on video and then it just shot straight up. It just whoosh, just shot straight up at breakneck speed. I'm like, well, that can't be a balloon. So that happened about, that was in the end of our August. That was like August 30th to August the 31st. That's what? About 2 months ago? A month or two?
Yeah, I remember. It was just a little bit before the show that we did.
Awesome.
Because it was still fresh in your mind. So,
awesome.
So have you regained any of the memories of that particular trip?
Seeing the beings. I remember being on the craft. I remember we went around the solar system a bit, and then they brought me back. And then my friend had a video of the craft. Apparently we did a flyby. I don't know if I was on the craft when he did the flyby, but, you know, he got a picture of the craft. So, you know, it just seemed to me to be just a sort of we got your message, and sort of a contact. And I see it as a sort of a motivation as well as confirmation. The fact that anybody who wants to have contact can have contact. You can have direct contact. You can have verifiable contact. You know, it'd have been one thing if I'd have just said I had an experience on a craft. Oh, you could have been hallucinating. All could have been this. But my friend got it on video. You know, so anyone
can... Oh, Darryl, we've lost you. Oh, there you go. Sorry again. You said anyone?
Anyone. And everyone has already had contact. That's one of the things that you were mentioning and discussing. You know, and that's not something I'm saying because, you know, I can't know that directly myself. But, you know, two of the greatest sources of information from the ETs are from two people who have their consistent direct contact. One is Darryl Anka and one is Lisa Royal. So Darryl Anka, one of his future lifetimes, he goes into the Sasani civilization. So the Sasani or a group of beings who are actually the result of the genetic experimentation that's going on with the Greys. You know, we all know the Greys. So the Greys for the last several decades have been taking people from this planet again by consent. Even if they don't consciously remember that consent, but everybody who was quote abducted before their lifetime had an agreement to participate. They helped them out. But suffice it to say, the people, the Greys who were taking people, and I'm sure you've heard the people, you know, they were abducted and they had a baby and suddenly the fetus disappeared from their womb and all these things going on, they were actually fashioning a hybrid race. And the Asasani are part of that race. And then you have Lisa Royal who contacts the Pleiadians. The Pleiadians are really another race of human beings like us, but they went through a different trajectory of development. And in their system, they've been conscious and evolving for thousands of years. So our civilization is basically just, you know, hundreds of years old or a few thousand years old of recorded history. But they've been conscious and for thousands of years. I mean, they even live for hundreds and thousands of years. So, they've all said that we've all had contact. We all have contact. So, but what happens is, because of our choice for third density, because of our choice for separation and segregation, that also happens within ourselves, like your guide was saying. Within ourselves, we segregate. And we take the memory of our contact experiences and segregate it off. And, but everyone has had contact, usually in the dream state. Usually, and when I say the dream state, which is really an out-of-body experience that is hazily remembered as a dream. So if I didn't have the decades of experience I have, you know, I could have thought that experience was a dream. But I know, I was like, you know, it was hazy, it wasn't so clear, but I know that was an out-of-body experience. And of course, then when my friend showed me the video the next day, it was like, well, there's more confirmation that was an actual experience. But everyone has had contact. And it's just an illustration of where we are, you know, where the planet Earth is right now. We're at a very potent transition point. A transition point where we are, we have the great potential to transition to a fourth density society. A fourth density society where there is no government. There is no, we recognize ourselves as one people. And where we have conscious contact and conscious open interactions with people from different planets. You know, according to these beings, it's inevitable that every single society, every single planetary society becomes a conscious planetary society. We ourselves divide ourselves up into groups, into America and Australia and all of these different separations. But they look at us as one planet whose plan is game of separation. Every single planet, if they don't destroy themselves, ends up being a global society. Either it happens by tyranny, by force, by coercion. People talk about the New World Order, you know, and how the European Union is the forerunner to that, and then you have the African Union, then they're trying to get the North American Union, they're trying to make one currency for North America and all this stuff. It could happen by force and coercion, or we can take these systems and let it happen by love and by joining and by choice. You know, it's not a bad thing that Europe is unifying and America, the North American continent is unifying. It's not a bad thing unless we make it a bad thing, unless we let it be a bad thing, unless we invest in the idea of separation, and then there has to be us being forced by them, and it's the New World Order and they're controlling us. And again, they're just a small group of human beings like us. They're just humans. You know, they're not gods, even though they may want us to believe they are. But people talk about the government, like it's some 20-story entity that walks around with the power to change it. They're just a small group of people that call themselves government. So when we can decide to take hold of ourselves, like your guide was telling you, and take a hold of our own minds and open ourselves up and accept ourselves as one being and consciously open ourselves up to these extraterrestrials, to each other. You know, one of the things that, the Pleiadian Sasha said in his book, Preparing for Contact by Lisa Royal, she said, you know, how can you expect to have open and conscious contact in a positive way when you can't even have contact with each other? You know? You know, exactly. We have to lock our doors, not because the government is going to break, and well, sometimes for that reason, but because they just break the door down. But we lock our doors because our next door neighbor may break into our car, right? You know, we watch our children because the person down the street may kidnap them, you know? So we are hateful with each other, which is why the foundation is looking at where you're hateful, where you're separative. Where are you being and content, the tyrant, right? Or the secretive person. Whether you lie or withhold, you know, whatever the reason is, you know. Like, for instance, one of the things that amuses me is, you know, it's a running joke, even though it's not really a joke, how people have a big deal talking to their children about sex, you know, and then it's like you have the talk. you know. And then up until that point, they're telling them, you know, a stork brought you, or it's all kind of stuff, you know. We're the ones that are so secretive, and then we get on the government about disclosure. When we can't even disclose to our kids such a natural part of our lives, I mean, it boggles my mind now as I start to be able to see what's going on from a broader perspective, how we're really all the same. It's just that the way the world is structured, you know, separation, a small group of people dominating, you can only have so many people in government, right? So, you know, when you have a person who's invested in separation and they join government, which means this small group of people who we decide have control over us, well, when they bully, well, they blow up a country. You know, they have the Vietnam War, you know. But, you know, a person who can't get in government, well, they become a manager at a business, and yet a tyrant of their job, right? We've seen that before. We've experienced a boss who is like, why this person has to keep bossing us around all the time and being angry all the time and causing problems because they didn't get in government, right? And then if you can't be a manager, then you have a child. And I'm sure you've seen, you know, the parent who's like yelling at their child and beating them and slapping them for no reason and they're towering over their child. It's the same thing. We're all the same people. You know, so, and I'm certain if you live on this planet, just like me, I live on this planet because I'm a tyrant too. I live on this planet because I'm a malabber too. I'm not in government, quote, so I can't go and take people from their homes or whatever. But I have instances in my life where I've wanted to be the boss and wanted to be the controller, right? So we all do this in whatever way. So the only way we're going to have a different type of society is if we start to address that within ourselves and start to allow people to have their freedom, you know, and when we start to look at how we're secretive. How we, you know, do a disclosure on yourself. We want to have a government disclosure. Do a you disclosure. Right? And you might be surprised to realize you're just as secretive as them. So that's what it's about.
That's very interesting, Daryl. I've been often talking about getting to know one's inner Nazi. You know, because everybody thought that Nazis, you know, lost the war and they were not there anymore. But actually, they're everywhere. Nazis are everywhere. It's the corporate structure of the world. You know, that's what, you know, all these so-called unions, the fascia is the thing that brings reeds together. It's the cord that binds the reeds together. So that's what the idea of fascism is. And it's bringing...
Let me take that a step further.
Go ahead.
It's not the social structure of the world. It's the psychological structure of the world. It's the thoughts that we have. Because
exactly.
if you say it's the social structure or these structures, then we're still in another victimhood situation. It's subtle, but it's there. You know, just like how people say money is the root of all evil. Well, where does money come from? We make money. I mean, people talk about money as if it's some kind of thing that just appeared out of thin air. And it's just like there. It's like, oh, money. And like we just have to use it because it's just a kind of universal directive. No. It's just, we cut down trees, and then we chop up the trees, and then we flatten it out, and then we put green dye on it, and we call it money. So the same thing with these structures, you know. These structures don't disappear out of thin air. You know, it's not like the first man was born on earth, and there was a structure there. And it was like, well, I guess we just gotta fit into this structure, and then we just fit into the structures. No. Man said, you know what, I think I'll make a structure. Since man made the structure and man was invested in separation, well, the structure is based on separation, so it's not the structure. It's not the societal structure. It's us. Money is the effect of us. Government is the effect of us. Societal structures are the effects of us. So the only thing that needs to change is our thinking. And when we change our thinking, the structures will change because we make the structures. Either the structures will change or they will cease to be, you know, or we will start to make a parallel structure that, in other words, like me and you, us who are talking right now. Right now we have a structure. It's called the conversation, right? But if you look at, for instance, the presidential debate, they have a structured conversation too, but what do? They're slinging mud at each other, right? They're looking at people's history to try to, they're doing whatever they can to make this person not be elected. They're attacking this person, they're arguing. I remember seeing years ago when I paid attention to that stuff, I believe it was George Bush and what was that guy who made that documentary, The Inconvenient Truth?
Oh, Al Gore.
Yeah, Al Gore.
The man who invented the internet, yeah.
That's right, that's right. And Al Gore made a point. I guess it was a good point. And George Bush didn't like it. So George Bush actually walked up towards Al Gore and postured up like he wanted to fight. And Al Gore was just looking like, what's wrong with this dude? But you could look at how angry he was. And he literally moved in his direction and turned to face him. And I mean, you could have been on the schoolyard, right? So that person who was invested in separation and attack, that's the kind of structure they make, a structure of debate, right? But us two, since we're more invested in oneness and progress, as the theme of your show is, you want to take people a bit farther than you are now, we're having a conversation where we're having back and forth and we're listening and, right, you see what I'm saying? So the structure that we have, the nature of our conversation, is the effect of our thoughts. So, and what's going to happen is we're building a structure, and there's people in the chat room listening, and there's people listening to the show, and they start to have discussions, and we're building another structure. And before long, we're gonna have so many people thinking the same way that we realize, well, everybody around me is thinking the same way, and we don't attack each other anymore. You know, and I don't have to lock my door because my next door neighbor, he's not going to rob me. He's going to look out for me now. Right. And then we realize that an entire new society has been built and the other one has fallen away. Not because we changed the structures, but because we changed ourselves. And the structure will always reflect the structurer. You know, the structure will reflect the builder. The builder makes the structure. The structure doesn't make the builder. So it's really about changing our thinking. So it's very subtle, but it's a very profound mistake to blame it on the structure, or to blame it on the money, or to blame it on the quote government. They're just people. They're just human beings. You know, again, if we didn't want this to be happening, it would not be. I guarantee you, if you transplant this structure, this quote structure, you know, with all, you know, you take all the law books and all the statute books and all the license machines and all the registration machines and all the permit papers, right? And all the everything and you take this whole quote structure and just drop it on the Pleiadian planet, you're going to look at it like, you know, let's recycle that mess or whatever. Let's take and make something useful out this thing.
Right? Exactly.
So,
go ahead. Well, it actually to take it back to a little bit further back, because I really want to press this concept, because there's all these, I keep talking about it on my shows, like, we haven't got a word for such and such, you know Eskimos have 1,000 words for snow. And Scots have 1,000 words for rain. The word that we use for somebody who has suffered or experienced emotional and traumatic abuse is the word we use, victim. But
that's right.
That is, nowadays, it's negatively pejorative. So what... And this is a word, you know, another concept that my guides have spoken with me about, is that once we've learned to heal the trauma of it, there will be another word for people who have been through this. Dave Corso, who I founded the station with, he was a member of the Project Talent, MK Ultra. Group, let's say he was involved in it. He didn't do it. It was done to him. Certainly at the beginning, anyway. And he was, you know, one of the first generation of super soldiers. Now, one of the words that he used was graduate. He said, "I'm not a Project Talent victim. I'm not a Project Talent survivor. I'm a Project Talent graduate." But you know. these projects, the only graduates are, you know, are survivors. All the rest are dead. So the word is, you know, it's like, do your people, do your you know, the people who you work with, has anyone come up with a better word than victim? That's what I'm saying. That's the word. That's the question.
Well, I mean, right now, I think the better word is just no word. I mean, why do we have to define? I mean, why do we have to make it such a big thing? I mean, why do we have to, you know, I mean, in one sense, I understand, because, like, for instance, you know, you can have a you know, like a contact experience with an ET and you call yourself a contactee, you know, or you know, I have out-of-body experiences, so I'll call myself an experiencer or a traveler. But I don't think it's really necessary. I don't think we have to sort of search for a word, especially when it's something that's in that sense negative, because you know, I guess the best word, if you had to make a word, would be chooser, which means it has to do with everything. Every single thing that we experience, we choose. So it sort of sounds to me like he's trying to still make it something. It's kind of like, you know, this person did such a horrible thing to me, and yes, it's so very horrible and it's bad, and I'm the victim of it, but I'm not going to call myself a victim. I'm going to be positive and call myself, you know. It's kind of like you're still kind of giving it more weight than it needs to have.
Well,
you know,
but the thing is that in the recovery process of coming in from, coming back into society and sort of readjusting oneself, in that process, if you do manage to heal it, what happens is that you come into contact with other parts of yourself that you never knew you had, which are what I call superpowers. And so it's, you get more, and you get more with every time you go to, you know, for any therapy or anything like that, you find another piece of yourself, and it's all about bringing fragmented parts of yourself. So
that's right.
What do you speak to fragmentation and inner child work and things like that?
Yes, definitely.
Is it part of the same process for you, or are things handled separately?
Separately from what?
If somebody comes to you and, you know, they talk about their MyLab and all that stuff, are you also able to identify that they may also have an unhealed inner child situation going on as well?
Well, this is the thing, you know, everyone on earth has the unhealed child, you know, and that's what I was getting at with the name thing. I think it's erroneous to kind of make it some kind of special thing, like somebody who went through my labs or some kind of way, the special, whatever name you want to give it. You know, we have to give it some special name. It's no different than the abuse you receive on your job. And I understand that a person going through that, it could seem very special to them, but everybody's pain is very special to the person who went through it. You know, so the person who was abused as a child sexually by, you know, their step parent, for instance, that's a common theme on this planet. They're just as traumatized and fragmented as the person who went through a my lab. You know, or the other person whose child died in a car accident, or you know, The foundational trauma is the investment itself in that separative framework. That's the trauma. So what I'm getting at is we really traumatize ourselves. The initial investment in separation that we make, that nobody else makes for us, that initial choice is the trauma. And whatever form it takes in the world, that's just what we project it onto. You know? So it doesn't matter what trauma you take. So again, the child who was sexually abused, the parent who lost their child in the bad accident, you know, the person who was attacked by the police, you know, the person who was abducted by the MyLabs, you know, the person who was abducted by real aliens, you know, the person who was bullied in school, you know, I mean, that some people commit suicide off of being bullied. You know, they're bullied in school and they commit suicide. The pain they're going through is just as powerful to them as the pain that the MyLab person went through. You know, we have people who are multimillionaires and they commit suicide. You know, actors, you know, Heath Ledger, Robin Williams. These people are multimillionaires. They have the things in the world that we think is even a good situation, and they still commit suicide. So it's not the external circumstance. It's a lie to say that it is. We experience it as being the case. But again, if you look at it from a broader perspective, whatever situation you could point out in the world, people have the same pain. The pain is not coming from the scenario. The pain is coming from the mind's decision. That's a predictive framework. That is what causes the pain. And then we secretly we wish to find something in the world to blame that pain onto. What goes back to the predestination, the self-predestination. We all knew everything was going to happen when we came here. You know? So if we don't want my life to happen, again, just disband government. And it doesn't take anything to disband government. All we have to do is just decide we're not going to give that thing credence anymore. You know? And if they come try to force me to do something I don't want to do, I'm going to defend myself. And I'm going to help you. And now it's, you know, 7 billion of us against, you know, 1 million. And now you can't tell us what to do anymore. You know, go somewhere else with your bullying. Very simple. So if we want my labs to end, it would end. The reason why my labs hasn't ended is because we're still choosing the thought, the investment in separation. And that's just one of the different forms that it manifests in, which is why I was saying if you want to pick a word, it will be chooser. But again, that's no different from any other experience that we have. You know, we chose separation and we experience a manifestation of that choice. The pain comes from my investment in separation. The effect, the manifestation takes that form, but the form is not the cause of my pain, right? Which is again why every different form, the person could experience the same pain. If you look at a MyLab, you know, and you know, there's accounts in that MyLab book. I mean, people get abducted, they get all kind of stuff. You know, some of them get devices put in their nose, and you know, some of them get tortured psychologically, and I mean, just all kind of, you know, some of them even get waterboarded. I mean, this is you know, so if you look at that, and then you look at, you know, there's a child who they're making fun of him in school and posting bad stuff about him on social media. You know, those two things seem quite different. You know, the MyLab seems a lot more drastic, a lot more invasive, a lot worse than, you know, just posting some messages about you on social media. But that person committed suicide because of the pain they were feeling. And I remember, because I studied this stuff, man. This is not a theory. If you just observe and research different people in different situations and the pain they have, they're going through the same pain. So I remember I was researching this one person. He was born a man, but he felt himself to be a female. And, you know, he started taking the hormone therapy, but he couldn't afford to take to get the operation. And but they had some people who were on social media harassing them and calling them names, and somebody even told them, you know, you should just kill yourself. And you could see his posts, you know, talking about the pain he's feeling and how horrible he feels, and you know, maybe he'd be better if he wasn't alive, and he ended up jumping off a bridge, killing himself. And if you look at it from the surface, it's just some people are just posting messages about you on Facebook, and, you know, get over it. But the pain he felt was just as painful as the person who's going through regressive hypnosis, because, you know, they was abducted and probed and all this kind of stuff. So it's not the effect, it's not the actions in the world, it's not the scenario in the world. That's not what it is. And the thorough density perspective says that it is, which is why you can have the I that is the system. It's these scenarios that we make. It's the system. It's the society. It's the structure. It's not the structure. It's not the structure. It's not the structure. It's not the MyLab abduction. It's not the parental abuse. It's not the bullying. None of that stuff is what's causing the pain. The pain is the choice that we're making inside. Which is why when you go to the other side, when you go to people like Yeshua, who was tortured and murdered, and he still felt peace. He still was able to say, forgive them for they know not what they do. He was still able to have a peaceful perspective. Mother Teresa, right? No matter what a person did or said, in her mind, everyone is Christ, and everyone is equally worthy of the love of God. You know, and you can go over person to person over person. The Buddha, you know, everyone, there's only one mind experiencing itself as many. Everyone is the same. You know, over and over and over, you can find people who look at the world from that perspective, and they could be peaceful no matter what's going on. and they cannot judge no matter what a person does. Again, because it's not the effect in the world, it's the choice that we make at the level of the mind. You know? So I would suggest who has any kind of pain, start to address your mind, address your thoughts. And I have a book on that coming out in March, he was asking me about, called Classes on the Course in Miracles, where we're dealing with this, with pure non-dualism. You know, there's a book out now called The Disappearance of the Universe by Gary Renard that breaks it down very deeply about the fact that all pain comes from the choice that we make at the level of the mind. And it's possible to address the mind level and experience peace no matter what is going on in your life. Now, you're talking about the fragmentation. Again, everyone is fragmented because we've chosen the idea of fragmentation. We've chosen a third density perspective. You know? So everyone, for the most part, you know, it's starting to soften now. But if you get down to the heart of it, all of us believes in separation. We all believe in government and governed. You know, and this team and that team, and black and white and red and yellow. You know, we all have investments in all of these separations as a reflection of our choice for separation. So once we choose that investment in separation, it manifests everywhere. It manifests within ourselves. So the fragmentation we have in our mind is not because we were mind-labbed. The fragmentation was there already. You know, you can take Yeshua and you can put him in the mind lab and you can never fragment him. It is absolutely impossible, which is why I was giving the example of the Pleiadians. There's no way you can possibly impose upon the Pleiadians what's going on the planet Earth. It is impossible because they're one being. You know, when they describe how they see us, they see the fragmentation in a human and it amazes them. You know, like a gray, for instance, may go to, let's say, quote, abduct a human. And they see the entire human. So they see the aspect of the human that's saying, yes, I agree to this, I'm ready, go ahead and take me. And there's the conscious aspect of the human that's saying, oh my gosh, I'm so afraid, leave me alone, go away. And a gray is like, it's like, wow, you know, it's like three people here. But he's going by the higher part that says, I agree to this, you know. So the fragmentation is the hurt child is us. We hurt ourselves by investing in separation. That's the hurt child. The hurt is not coming from what, quote, they did, whoever they are. The child within ourselves is hurt and fragmented because we ourselves have chosen pain and fragmentation. And until you recognize that, you will always experience pain and fragmentation, and you will always find some boogeyman on the outside to blame it on. The boogeyman is not the cause of it. The boogeyman is the effect. It's always the case.
So, thank you. With that said, we are going to come out from the inner solar system, and we're going to take a break with Jimi Hendrix with the Third Stone from the Sun, which is one of my favorite Hendrix tracks. And it's all about, like, if you listen carefully, it's quite distorted what he says, but he's talking about describing the planet from above, what it would look
awesome.
Like. So Third Stone from the Sun. A bit of not a very gentle landing. Maybe that describes how he got to the planet. Jimi Hendrix there with Third Stone from the Sun. This is Ever Beyond on Wolf Spirit Radio, a subscriber-supported station. Not only that, but we've also got a chat room. So you can subscribe, you can come to the chat, you can join in with all the other 17 people there in the chat room. Thank you very much for coming there. And if you are listening on other devices, you can just come along and enjoy yourselves. So thank you very much. My guest tonight is Daryl Berry, and we've been talking. I mean, it's a pretty sort of a controversial subject, the idea that we choose our experiences and that nobody's a victim, and that these are choices because we, on a higher dimensional level, we know that these things will be part of our spiritual enhancement, for want of a better word. Is that about the size of it?
That in my experience is not the purpose, right? So the foundational separation, the foundational separation that we have, that we experience, is our investment in being separate from, you can say, God, right? I don't want to offend anyone with the religious word. It's not a religious statement. It's not like when I say God, not God of the Bible. It's a state of absolute oneness that is the only thing that's real. And from the level of this state of oneness, anything that's separate does not exist. So from that level, the entire universe of form is a dream that does not really exist. Now, that, of course, that's not something you're going to understand intellectually. I remember I had an experience as I started to apply this way of thinking more to my life and looking at things from a different perspective. And I had an experience where the universe disappeared. And I experienced myself as a mind beyond basically everything I could perceive and be aware of. And this self that I am now, that's obviously very important to me because it seems to be me, I experience it as me, with just a little bitty speck of nothing. And everything was just a field of nothing, a field of meaninglessness is a more appropriate word. And I experienced a wealth of fear because I recognized that this mind that's projecting everything is meaningless as well. And once this one mind lets go of investment in its own false existence, it simply disappears. The whole universe disappears. That's not going to be intellectually understood. Bringing that down to our experience here, all the pain that we feel is a result of our investment as that one mind in separation, as all the pain that we feel. Now, there's one mind, as Buddha said, bringing it down to another level. Buddha said there's one mind experiencing itself as many, similar to the level of mind I experienced, where there was just one mind, and it was all this activity that was the effect of this mind. Everything in the universe are all fragments or projections of this one mind. Right? Now, part of the separation that it chooses when it projects this stuff out, the individual fragments experience itself as being a separate individual being, just like we all experience ourselves as being separate. To break it down to another level, when you say have a child that has been abused, right? It's not to say that that child, as a child, is responsible for that abuse and chose that abuse. On the level of the world, that child, all it knows is just a child, and this person abused him. And the person who's abusing that child, all that person knows is I'm a person in the world, and you know they have their issues and they abuse the child. So it's not to say that that child, you need to tell the child you're responsible. Like people will say that people are responsible for being raped. That's not what it means. What it means is that child can be taught as that child grows, that he can look at that situation differently, or she can look at that situation differently, and recognize that the pain that they feel, the pain, the anguish that they feel, can be released by looking at the choice they made at the level of mind, by starting to recognize, by shifting their identity from one of individual self to one of mind. Right? So it's not that you look at and see you, JP, are responsible as an individual for, you know, the government or abusing you or the MyLab grabbing you. But it's to recognize that you can let go of JP. You can let go of the child and recognize yourself from a greater perspective, right? So it's not to say that the individual, as you experience yourself, to be as responsible. It's to say that the individual is an effect of that mind, just as everything else is. But as long as the individual chooses to hold on to the investment in that judgment, that's a reflection of the choice at the mind's level to be invested in separation. So that's a lot to say in a small sentence. I've given an entire 2-hour interview just on that, on that right there.
Well, here's the thing. It's the
interview on that. So, but that's a nutshell of it.
It's about the letting go of something that we are invested in. Yes?
Yes, letting go of the investment and separation, letting go of the perspective.
What are the benefits of being invested in separation? There's a good question, isn't there? Why do people do this stuff?
That's why we do it, our existence. In other words, if I am a hurting child who was abused, the benefit from the mind's perspective is I exist. Judgment, attack, pain, victimhood, it acts as a barrier or a field that keeps our individuality intact. Let me give you more detail about the experience that I had. Everything about ourselves that we invest in, I'm a man, I'm an author, all the characteristics that we see about ourselves, from a different level, they're all a lie. Because from a higher level, we all one mind projecting all of this stuff. But one of the things that I've always prided myself on is my intellect. I used to always do really good in school and could understand things well. And so my intellect was and still is a very prominent part of my identity, my self-identity. One of the things I within myself, how I identify myself, how I want to be identified. But what I was doing one day, I was sitting in my college class, and I took a semester or two in college. I didn't get a degree or anything. But I was sitting in my class, and I was looking at it from this perspective that if in truth there's only one mind projecting everything, then the idea of intellect is a lie. The idea of intellect is a fabrication that we make to create an experience of separation. So this person is smart, this person is not so smart, this person is a genius. It's all a lie. So what happens is there's many different levels of denial. Like you were saying about the denial and fragmentation, intelligence is one of those aspects of denial. Whereas one mind, we decided on separation, we projected that idea of separation out, unless we have a whole bunch of different beings with different fragmentations and denials, where one seems to be more intelligent than another, and one seems to be less intelligent than another, and then somebody can be intelligent and hit their head and they're no longer intelligent. It's all a lie. So I was really starting to look at the fact of the lack of importance of this cornerstone of my identity. And when I really got to the point where I saw that intellect doesn't make me different from anyone else, that's when the universe disappeared. That's when everything just disappeared. And I experienced myself as a mind projecting everything. I experienced myself as this mind. And I really don't know how far that, I don't know if it was just the mind that's projecting the planet Earth or the mind. I don't know how far it went, but I know it was a mind beyond individual self, a mind in which a large field of activity, in which the self that I am now was just some small, meaningless aspect of it. And it was all this meaningless activity, and I had the experience of the fact that all of our different demarcations are just a fabrication. It's a lie. Right? But I had such fear. There was a period of time when it was like, it was almost like there was not a self to even recognize it. But at some point, mind hit. And when mind hit, when this sense of self hit, fear hit, because a part of me knew, a part of me recognized that I can let go even farther and let go of this sense of self altogether. And immediately I collapsed back into an individual in the world with all my likes and dislikes and self and so on and so forth. So I experienced the fact that all of our pains, all of our likes, all of our dislikes, all of our investments act as defenses to keep the I intact, to keep the individuality intact. That's the result. That's the reward that we get. The reward that we get for staying invested in separation, the reward that we get for believing that I'm the victim or I'm the victimizer, that we're different, the reward that we get for believing that there's the government and there's the governed and there's separation and there's attacked and there's a system and there's all, the reward that we get for staying invested in this system is that I exist. Yes, I'm hurting and I'm painful, but I exist. So rather than allowing myself to continue to exist as this universal mind, and then beyond that to a state of absolute bliss, in which there is no separation at all, I chose to collapse back down because I was afraid of letting my individual identity. I was afraid of letting it go, and that's what it is with everyone. Behind all our pains, behind all of our regrets in our victimhood or our victimization, behind all of our desire to be attacked and our desire to attack, is a small, small voice that says, but I exist. I exist. That's what the reward is. So what ends up happening is the pain of our investment in separation starts to overshadow the reward of existing. And then we start to become more willing to let go of our investment. I mean, even if you look at our world, I mean, separation is applauded. You know, you can't just do something. You have to be distinguished. You have to perform with distinction, and then you get the award, right? You have to distinguish yourself. You know, we talk about our products and our efforts. How is what you're doing different from what somebody else is doing? We applaud separation because that's how we get our recognition. I want to be recognized. I want to be, you know, I want to get my just desserts. So it's to hold on to our individuality. But when the pain of that starts to become intolerable, then we start to let go of that. Then we start to recognize that we're the same. Then we start to become less invested in the idea of separation. Then we start to become less invested in the idea of victimhood. And that's how that child can grow up and recognize, yes, that happened to me when I was a child, but I'm not a child anymore. You know, how could something that happened, you know, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 5 minutes ago, how can that really affect me right now? What we call the trauma of the past is really a memory that I'm choosing in the present to bring up right now. It's really something in the present, because I could just let that go, right? We're choosing right now to bring that up. You know, Byron Katie is a perfect example of this. She said, if someone comes and slaps me, right after the slap happens, it's over. And I could just say grace. I could be at peace because it's over. It's not happening right now. She lives totally in the moment because she's not invested in the separation. So the traumas of the past doesn't affect her. There's a verse in the Course in Miracles that says, the past is over. It can touch me not. The past is over. But what we do is, in the moment, we choose to bring up that abuse over and over and over and over. So that person may have abused us 10 times, but we abuse ourselves 1,000 times because we bring it over and over in our mind. And then we go to therapy and bring it up in therapy over and over and over. And we're reviewing and regurgitating it over and over and over. Why? So I can luxuriate in the pain that protects my individuality, but now I could blame you for it because separation is painful. Being apart from that absolute oneness is painful. But I exist. And that's the investment that we have in judging, because it's painful. And I want to hold on to the pain, but I still don't want to be the cause of the pain. I want you to be the cause of the pain. And that's the mind's choice for this world of separation and attack. Right? So then we project it out, we deny it, and all I remember is being an individual in the world, and thus I'm a victim, and you did it to me. But secretly, we luxuriate it. And again, that's why we bring it up over and over and over and over and over. Everyone has had trauma. Every single one has had trauma. I've had trauma. You know, no one has had a parent that has always been there for them. You know, it's impossible. There was some period of time when your parent didn't buy what you wanted or whatever. You know, when I was in school, I got bullied in school. You know, everyone has had trauma. You know, I remember, you know, everyone has had trauma. You know, when I choose to think about it, I think about all the trauma I had that in my mind was just as traumatizing to me as what anybody else's trauma has had. But what I've learned to recognize, as I've been telling you, is that the pain that I feel is nothing to do with what they did or didn't do. The pain is what I'm choosing right now. It's the investment that I'm making right now. And I learned from my personal experience, as I let go of that investment in myself right now, the pain goes away. And I could look at things differently. I didn't grow up looking at the government and recognizing that they're the same. I was thinking it was the government tearing us too, and it, you know, blah, 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 the whole thing. But as I start to go more and more and more, I start to realize I'm not a victim, right? You know, I've been pulled over and given tickets for stuff, and I've been profiled. I've been racially profiled. You know, I have my rights infringed upon. I've been have my hands at the back of the car. And I mean, you know, I've been through all that stuff. But I can start to look at that and realize, you know what? The anger that I feel, you know what? I've been the tyrannizer before too. It's my own choice. It's my own investment in separation. And I can start to see where I've been the tyrant. And I can start to see where we're the same. And as I start to let go of myself being the tyrant, and be at peace within myself, I look at that situation differently. And I see the pain that they're going through, which is the same pain that I was going through when I did my victimization. We were going through the same pain. Like, I start to have compassion for that person. I can start to not judge that person that at the time I thought was the greatest abuser, the greatest attacker, the cause of my pain. You know?
Do you know what's interesting is that in these situations, you know, a really apparent easy one to look at is like in a relationship, and you talk about events that have happened in your recent past, and the way, you know, this happened to me, and I, you know, you made me feel this, and I was this, and you were that, and, you know, and when you discuss it, I mean, 99.9% of cases, each person was feeling exactly the same feeling.
Exactly.
So, where did the argument come from? It was like the feeling was there, and then everybody made up an excuse as to why it was there. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. That's every single scenario. Again, that individual child on that level is not doing that. But again, the child is a lie. The identity of a child is a lie that we hold on to. This is my identity as an intelligent person in the world is a lie. When I let go of that identity, I realize, wow, I'm not an individual at all. So yes, you're exactly right. That's why everyone has had trauma. Because again, the trauma is the investment in separation in the first place. That's the trauma. The pain is already there when we come into the world. You know, it's a mistaken perspective that children are born as some kind of blank slates, and then the world corrupts them. We're born with the pain. And secretly, on that unconscious level, we're secretly, we're looking for the next person to traumatize us, which is why so often, I'm sure you've experienced it before, sometimes we even consciously look for abuse so we can blame the person. We do this. We want to be the victim. I'm sure you've experienced it before. I remember when I was a kid, as a very cute example, you know, me and my cousin was always fighting and arguing and stuff like that. And one time she went so far, we were standing in my room, and she started punching herself in the face, and I believe she even ran into the wall. And then she ran into the kitchen. Oh, Daryl hit me, so I can get a spanking. That's what we do. And I've done that before myself. I've consciously wanted to get my cousin in trouble, you know. So I put on. I know he's about to do something. Like a good example is. My uncle one time, he was like, you know, he's like not much older than me. Like, he's like only like 3 or 4 years older than me or whatever. And we were kids and we were in a pool, and he was dunking people's heads in the water. So I stood there knowing he was going to come and dunk my head, and he dunked my head because I wanted him to be in trouble. And then my mom and dad had come, you know, George, what, don't you do that? And consciously I'm glowing. I'm so happy that he got beat up on by my, you know, I did that. I purposely chose to be the victim so he can get beat up. But the ego's idea of it is, yes, I'm an individual, but you're the one responsible for it. You have the pain and you're being punished for it. Even if we don't do that consciously, we always do that. So the end of trauma is starting to recognize, it's starting to expand your identity from the individual self to the mind. And then you start to look at everything differently, right? And again, you start to realize, just like with me, you know, I used to be married, and it didn't turn out well at all, you know, so I got a divorce. And but for the first year after the divorce, I was constantly regurgitating in my mind all the stuff she did that made me want to divorce her. Then I had to realize, why do I keep thinking about this stuff? And I had to realize I wanted that stuff to happen. There's no accident that I chose her to be my wife, who turned out to be this horrible person. If so, I could spend the next 2 or 3 years saying, oh my gosh, that was horrible. And look at what she did, and look at what that did. And I was so, and you know, that's why I was regurgitating going over and over and over, because I need to have something to regurgitate. So secretly, I wanted to have that experience so I could regurgitate it. But again, at the time, I didn't know that. At the time, I was just, you know. But as I start to look at this more and more from this perspective, it just, it goes beyond sense. You experience it. You start to have experiences that go beyond the self. And you start to have experiences of peace. Not only will you start to look at those traumas, where what my parents did to me, and what the police did to me, and what my ex-wife did to me, and what the school teacher did to me, and what the boss did to me. I could go all down the list of all the people that traumatized me, who at the time I was so angry and so fearful or so dejected or so suicidal or so whatever I was at the time. But now I can realize, you know what? It was my own choice for separation that caused that pain. The same choice I'm making now, which is why I keep regurgitating it. I don't have to keep regurgitating it. It happened 20 years ago. Why am I still thinking about it now? Right? It happened 20 years ago, and I'm living 1,000 miles away from the person. It has nothing to do with my life right now. Why am I still regurgitating this? It's because I'm luxuriating in the pain that keeps my individuality intact, but makes you responsible for it. Like you were saying, the pain is there, but we need to make an excuse for it, and an excuse for it. And if there's not someone attacking me right now, well, guess what? I have a memory bank full of people who attacked me when I was a kid. And I regurgitated. And now I'm feeling angry or depressed. And I'm regurgitating in my mind what this person did to me. Then I go to therapy. This is why I can't have relationships right now, because this person did to me. Now all my relationships are horrible because what the person did to me 10 years ago. You know, this person treated me horribly 10 years ago. Now whenever I get in a relationship, I'm fearful this person is going to do the same thing to me. So I'm so afraid, and I push this person away, and you know, we do this, right? We all experience this, right? No, mm-hmm. I can't keep a job anymore because that last boss traumatized me. I can't keep a relationship because that person traumatized me. I can't sleep at night because the aliens are going to come get me again. All this stuff where we regurgitate this pain over and over and over to justify the choice we're making right now for pain. We need to have an excuse. And this is not anything you can force upon someone. This is something that you graduate to. You were saying about graduating. It's something you graduate to when you finally realize the pain is not worth it. The pain is not worth it. You know, eventually regurgitating all the crazy stuff my ex-wife did, it was like, you know what, I could actually pay attention to some positive stuff now. Why am I keep doing this? So I can make her the victimizer, so I can make her the guilty one, so I can keep my individuality intact and she be the cause of it. And I realized, again, I must have wanted it then, because obviously I want it now because I'm the one that's remembering it right now. So then I can start to let that go, and it becomes neutral in my life, because it becomes less of a controlling factor. You know, now when I talk to the next policeman, I'm not talking to them based on, you know, not to say that I agree with government still, but still that doesn't mean I need to treat my next spouse as a whatever because of what my ex did. But that's what we do. You know, my ex did this, so now I'm going to make sure you don't do this to me. And then we're treating that person as if they're the old person, which causes problems in that relationship, and then they leave us, and then this pain is recycling that same guilt over and over. So, yeah, you know, that's what it's meant.
I find that that kind of thing, that gets held in the body. And, you know, you actually kind of clench. I discovered, you know how you can clench your eyes? You can clench any part of your body.
That's right.
Even your internal organs. And I think we get to a point when we hold that clenched organ, and these are the feelings that you're talking about here, is that they actually, you know, we literally hold them in the body as something like a signal that is continually running from our brain, that we continually create the energy for that to keep happening.
That's right.
And it makes us uncomfortable, because having a clenched muscle means there's no blood flow, and it literally will cause you pain because of the buildup of lactic acid crystals, which point sharply into the nervous system. So it literally creates pain if you have these things clenched up. So we're, you know, about half an hour towards the end of the program, and this is, you know, I think it might be a good point. Do you have any journeys that you'd like to bring our audience on? You know, because we're going to be doing some meditations in the next show, we often like to do that. But you know, it's your choice. If you can either talk or lead us through another journey, whichever you feel is more appropriate.
Well, yep. If I was to give a certain type of journey that I sometimes do on the topic of dealing with this pain and dealing with the guilt and dealing with so on and so forth.
I think that would be very valuable. Thank you.
I say everybody wants to close their eyes for a moment and center within yourself and just imagine, look around yourself in your mind's eye, and see the activity going on around you. And what I want you to do is, for instance, you can see yourself talking to your spouse, see yourself talking to your husband, see yourself talking to your school teacher. Just imagine looking around yourself and seeing all the different scenes of your life, whether good or bad. And I want you to see around you all these different scenes, all these different, almost like a bunch of movie screens or TV screens, millions of them around you, all playing a different scene of your life. And realize and look at yourself in the middle of all of them, not being touched by any of them. Realize that every single one is just an image apart from you, separate from you, that you can look at or not. So, and then what I want you to do is, thinking about this, see all of those TV screens disappearing, whether you see millions of TV screens around you, whether you see just, you know, holographic images floating in the air. I mean, there's so many visualizations you can have. But just see all of the scenes of your life around you just disappearing, so that now it's just you sitting in a void, a place of absolute peace, a place of absolute stillness. So now there's no activity around you. It's just absolute peace, absolute stillness, right now in this moment. Right now. And what I want you to recognize is, this peace you have right now, this stillness, every single moment of your life, you have the opportunity to be at this place. Regardless of what anyone does or doesn't do. Regardless of what anyone says or doesn't say, just sit within this moment of peace. This moment when there's just stillness around you and that trauma is not there. The trauma happened in the past, but right now you're at peace. So you can always choose this peace, regardless of what has happened, regardless of what will happen. And you stay with your eyes closed and experience this peace, this quiet. And think about the examples that we have. Yeshua, Jesus, Buddha, Mother Teresa, Nisargadatta, Ramana Maharshi. We have so many examples of people who demonstrate that no matter what happens, they can be at peace. Byron Katie. On and on and on. And you can research these people and see that ultimately you are the prime determinant of what you experience by your choices, by what you choose to focus on, by what you choose to invest in. And just sit with this stillness and recognize that it's always there. There's a quiet center of peace within our being that is always there. It's an immovable center. That's why the Bible talks about the peace that passeth understanding. There's a peace that passeth understanding because there's nothing that can affect it, because the peace is within. Otherwise, you can never be at peace. If anything on the outside really has the power to take you out of that quiet center, then there's no such thing as a quiet center. The quiet center means that it's always there. It's the center, it's the core. And what I want you to do is, from this quiet center, bring back those hologram images, bring back those movie screens, and realize that you can look at all of these scenarios from that quiet center. Look back at the abuse that you had as a child and realize you can see it now from this moment, from that quiet center. You can look at it differently. And your spouse and your boss and your government and you can look at everything from this quiet center. And from this quiet center, when you start to look from that center more and more, you no longer see victim and victimizer. You no longer see abuser and abused. You no longer see have and have nots. From that quiet center, you start to see things differently. You start to see things from a unified perspective that no one can take away from you. And let's just spend just a minute, just 30 seconds, and just feel that center. And feel that center with all the activity around you. But realize that center is immovable. You don't have to leave it. Let's just spend just 10 or 20 seconds there. So let's come on out of it. We can start to reintegrate with our physical body and open our eyes. And that's something that I actually use. It's not anything that I read anywhere or anything. It's just what I've, what the experience taught me. You know, and I can understand the unbelievableness of it. You know, like Dolly Angel in chat was saying, you know, he must not have experienced trauma then. He must not have really experienced anything if he can say that. It's not the case. But like you were saying, people have all these different experiences, but they have the same emotions and they're finding something dependent on to. The trauma is not what goes on in the world. So you may find someone who the worst thing that happened to them is, you know, their trust fund parents didn't buy them the Lexus that year. And they could be just as upset as the person who had their home taken with the government scandal in America with the mortgages. They could be just as upset and just as traumatized. So it's really about the choice that you make. That's what it's really about. And just remember that you could always go back to that center. But, you know, but again, this exercise came from the experience. So, like, doing that alone is not going to heal your unconscious guilt. You really have to look at what you're judging and what you're hating and start to interpret it differently. And what will happen is that meditation will become less and less a meditation, and it'll become more and more just your experience. And I'm not saying I'm fully there yet. I still get angry and I still get upset and I still regurgitate things from my past. But more and more, when something, quote, upsets me, more and more I start to recognize, you know what, that's not what it really is. It's really the choice I'm making right now. Let me look within myself. I'm able to experience peace. And the thing comes up from the past, and again, I say, what? Oh, I'm bringing that up again, huh? Yeah, that's in the past. What choice am I making right now? I'm investing in separation. I'm investing in seeing this person as separate from me, rather than recognizing that we're really just one mind. Investing ourselves in this nonsense. I could let that go, and I start to experience peace more and more. And then more and more things don't affect me. More and more, this thing that would have upset me, it doesn't. I'm in that quiet center. You really start to experience something happens and it just doesn't upset you. When you know it would have a year ago or a day ago. You know? And again, the things from the past, you start to see it differently. You start to see those people differently. You start to be able to look at people with compassion and realize the pain that they're going through. You know, the pain that the victim is going through is the same pain that the victimizer is going through. And that's why, there's a, you know, I can't think of a better word, but that's why there's a danger in believing that trauma, the experience of trauma, really has to do with, you know, what a person had done to them. Or you're not upset anymore. It must not have been so serious. It must not have been as serious as what I'm experiencing. Right? Because then we must believe that the victimizer must not be experiencing pain because they're the victimizer. The victim, I'm experiencing pain because I was hurt. You're just guilty. No. The victimizer experiencing pain too. We're all the same. It's just that pain manifests in different ways at different times, which is why even the victimizer is the victim. I mean, even the victim is the victimizer too. We're talking about childhood abuse. That's why statistically, the often becomes the childhood abused often becomes the abuser, because we're all the abuser, right? Which is why the person who, you know, is so angry at government might be abusing their child, or abusing their wife, or abusing their husband, or abusing their employers, or abusing their employees, whatever. You know, everyone is experiencing that pain, whether you're the victim or the victimizer. It doesn't matter how apparently bad your trauma was. It's irrelevant. The trauma, again, is that mind's choice for separation. That is the trauma. That is the only trauma. And the form it takes in the world is irrelevant. So the victimizer is in just as much pain as the victimized, or else they would not be victimizing. Can you imagine Jesus victimizing somebody, or Buddha, or Mother Teresa? Can you imagine Mother Teresa beating somebody up in the street? No. It's not the badge that makes a cop abusive. They're just abusive. That's the way their pain manifests. That's why, again, a parent can be just as abusive. An employer can be just as abusive. A politician can be just as abusive. An army person can be just as abusive, wanting to get into the army to go overseas to shoot people so they can do it legally. They can be just as abusive because the abuse is the pain inside. That's where the pain is really from. It doesn't matter how it manifests. And the more you start to heal your pain, the more you start to recognize that. And again, mm-hmm. you start to judge less. You start to see people differently, and it's done wonders for me. The peace that I'm starting to feel more and more is just wonderful. It's just wonderful.
Okay.
You know, so
we have a caller, actually.
Okay.
Thomas Hughes, a regular guest. My kettle is boiling in the background. Thomas.
Yes.
Do you have some words for Daryl Berry, our guest?
Oh, I was just very interested in what he was saying about the dozens of timelines that exist out there. And I just wanted to thank him for speaking about that, because I've talked about that for quite some time, and I get treated like I'm a crazy man.
Awesome. You're certainly welcome. You know, it's not so... maybe in common discussion, it might be sort of outlandish now, but if you go out to quantum physics, I mean, you know, in the highest level of physics, they're starting to recognize this, the different dimensions and the different timelines. And I've experienced this directly via the out-of-body experience. I went out of body and went into a different timeline and jumped into my body in that timeline. And when I jumped into my body in that timeline, I became that person. Like, all memory of me having an out-of-body experience was gone, and I was able to directly see how we're doing the same thing right now. You know, I seem to be Daryl in this timeline doing this or that, but it's all just a fabrication that we make. So the fact is, every single choice you make, that it can have multiple outcomes. So for instance, let's say, you know, you're wondering, should I go left or should I go right? You're really unsure. Chances are you go both directions, and there's an aspect of yourself that went left, and there's an aspect of yourself that went right. And what happens is, at the end of our last lifetime, all of these cells coalesce together, and we have the memory from these different timelines. You know,
back in, I just want to, if you don't mind indulging me for a moment, I'll just relate an experience that I had back in 1990. I was driving my car, and I had a friend in the car with me, and we're going down a two-lane road on the north side of Houston. And we're alone on this two-lane road, middle of the day, and all of a sudden, I just grabbed my chest and was making sounds of pain, and she grabbed her knees and was rubbing her knees, and I looked at her and I said, did you see that? She said, that Ford 3/4-ton truck that just ran into us? I said, you saw it. She goes, why do you think I'm rubbing my knees? What do you, my knees hit the dashboard. And I'm like, yeah, my chest hit the steering wheel. And yet it didn't happen in this reality. But we felt it in the reality right next door.
A very good example. So, and we've all experienced that. Just like with contact, I mean, really what we're talking about is just common stuff, really. It's just in our own investment and separation, that's just another thing that we separate off. I had a similar experience when I was a child. You know, I'm sure you remember as a child, you have your bicycle and you make these ramps that you run your bike up.
Yes.
I made this insanely high ramp. That I'm pretty sure my parents saw me, they would have stopped me. I mean, this insanely high ramp. Nobody else wanted to jump on it. I went to the end of the block. I ran about full speed. I jumped on it. I landed on my head, broke my neck, and died.
Ooh.
I'm standing out of the body, seeing myself dead. Then there's a whole bunch of commotion. Then I'm back in the air again, flipping, and I land on my wheels. So I died, some force reset everything, and then I was back in my body and I lived that time. So apparently there was one timeline where I died and I had vague, I guess you can call it a future memory. You know, during that time when I was dead, I had a vague, like I was able to see into the future and see how sad my mom was and see the, you know, the funeral and just, I was able to see that timeline sort of play out. Then, in my experience, everything reset and I have a timeline where I'm alive again. So very, very good example. So everybody has had experiences like this, I'm sure, with specifically with dying. But we also have experiences where, you know, you want to go left, you want to go right, you experience both ways. And that other self is still experiencing that other timeline right now. So for instance, if you survive that accident in that other timeline, that other self could still be living right now.
Well, the other experience I had where the same thing, kind of thing happened, by myself, and, this is like what I call the sleeping world in the dream. And so, a sequence of events happened and I had to go down and move my car at the driveway. Normally I parked on the street and I had to move my car so that, my mother could park in the garage. And as I pulled bike into the driveway and jumped out of the car, I was running for the house, and that's when a lightning bolt struck me in the head, and the dream was over. And I woke up going, oh, wow, okay. And I completely forgot about it. Same thing happened 2 weeks later in reality in the waking world, as I call it, except this time, I made it all the way back in. Instead of having to run for the front door, she left the garage open before she started closing it, and I went in that way. So it changed, just like in the movie Next. Once you look at it, it changes. So I made it back in the house, made it upstairs to my queen-size bed, was trying to decide which Blockbuster video to watch first back in the 92 when they still had VCR tapes instead of this or anything. And that's when a lightning bolt hit the ham radio antenna outside my house, came down the line and hit me in the foot, threw me across the room.
Awesome.
So wow. I knew that was a wake up call. It's like, all right, you didn't want to leave. Okay, you're still here.
That's a very interesting point, because I heard on a global scale that this has happened, that there was an idea that on one timeline that the CERN device opened up, poof, everybody died. The whole universe ceased to exist. And that we all go along to the next available parallel plane, and we instantly incarnate into these bodies where we are now. Has anyone experienced that kind of thing?
Well, since I've been in touch with the Sasquatch people, there's a lot of things I've experienced that I just don't talk about very much. I mean, I've talked about a lot because I used to host a radio show and on the same network that you're hosting right now, JP, but there's a lot of things that I've experienced that I just don't talk about because they get labeled crazy enough as it is. I don't need to add to it.
I understand. I've gone through that period before, but, you know, in my experience, I would say, Thomas and anyone else out there who has experiences that you, are uncertain about sharing, I would say validate them more. Like for instance, with the out-of-body experience, when I decided to start really validating it, and like I would go out of body and visit somebody and confirm it, and I would see somebody and confirm it, or with the ET thing, you know, where I started to have contact sightings, physical world sightings, and now even to have a video of one of the craft I was on. I don't really care if anybody believes me or not. I don't really care if you call me crazy or not, because I know. I know.
Yeah.
So, and another thing I've learned is, once I did start talking about it, the people who call me crazy, I notice I don't really see them anymore. And I start to see more people who are like you all, who've had their own experiences and who know this stuff is real. So I would say, if you want to actually experience a world where people no longer call you crazy, you need to stop calling yourself crazy. Because when you withhold, that's what you're doing. You're calling yourself crazy. So what I did, I stopped calling myself crazy. And I said, well, you know, this is what I experienced, and if you don't like it, deal with it. If you don't think it's real, deal with it. And if you think I'm crazy, come with me. I would tell people that. Okay, you think ETs and UFOs is crazy? Next time I'm going to set up a sighting, come with me. Let's go. Silence. That's what I got.
Well,
silence. So, you know.
What I can say on that is, you know, there's people that came here in 2010 and, 15 people had Sasquatch experiences, and 5 people actually saw them in the daylight. So they can't call me crazy anymore. They have to call themselves crazy as well if they're going to call me crazy.
But,
you know, there was a woman sitting next to me on the pier, 2 women actually, and they were both looking at something, and I just looked at the ground because I knew what they were looking at. And the woman to my left started elbowing me, saying, "Look, look!" And I turned towards her, and I said, "I don't have to look to know that he's real. Besides that, I'm worried about tripping and falling on one of them." And her eyes got real big because she knew that I knew she was looking at a man that was about 18 inches tall.
Sounds good, man. A friend of mine just, he's an out-of-body explorer as well. Not to lie from him, he's a very good out-of-body explorer. About a month or two ago, he had an out-of-body experience where he saw some Sasquatches on a different dimension. And they actually followed him through dimensions. And, when he got back into his body later, he started researching it. And he found this, unbeknownst to him, there was this researcher who found, he even wrote a book called Multidimensional Sasquatches or something like that. I don't remember exactly. I mean, that's not such a great interest of mine, but I'm a bit familiar with it. But, yeah, man, I'm certain what you saw is what you saw. I know somebody who saw him, the Pleiadians talk about him, I would say really it has to come down to you doing it for yourself. But more and more over time, I just decided, you know, to hell with it, man. This stuff is happening, I'm going to talk about it. And that's the only way, and really ultimately was for a very selfish reason, and this is a selfish reason. You know, like JP was talking about how on a planetary scale, these things happen, which does happen. There's been alternate timelines that's been destroyed. There's alternate timelines, as the Pleiadians have informed us, that are, you know, we think this is tyranny. There's timelines of Earth where it's on lockdown. It's like Nazi Germany times 10 everywhere. There's many different timelines. And how you experience the timeline you want is how you change yourself. You know, we don't have to take anybody along. We don't have to coerce anybody with some kind of mass, critical mass. And ironically, that's how it may play out. That's how it may look. But the way you experience a world in which these facts of existence are recognized as facts of existence is for you and your life to treat them as facts of existence. And when I started treating, for instance, the out-of-body experience as a fact of existence, I started to get more people, you know, like before I became, like right now I'm public and, you know, I'm writing and everything, but when I was just talking to people, you know, at work, you know, people might say this or that in front of everybody else, or people might sit silent in front of everybody else, but then I'd be on lunch and somebody would come to me and say, Darryl, I never told anybody this before, but this happened when I was, you know. I might talk about ETs, and several people might come later when nobody's watching and say, Darryl, I've never told anybody this before. But then, surprisingly, I started to see how I was not alone. You know, even amongst all the people who hide themselves, and
well, you know,
the world became more normal to me in my experience because I made it more normal. I normalized it by letting it be normal. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yes. Well, we had an experience when Dave Corso was alive. I don't know if JP, if you remember this or not, but Roger Silver.
We've
and
only
I
got only, a couple of minutes.
I know. We're going to go fast.
Go
fast. We all remember back in 1996, Ernest Borgnine passing away, and then he passed away again in 2010. And we all remember that.
Yes, the Ernest Borgnine enigma.
Yes.
I think we're going to have to leave it as an enigma, and as an enigma, and oh god, I can't even say it, enigma, because I'm an enigma, ignorant McNugget. Thank you so much, Daryl. It's been a really fascinating show. Really got some good chat going in the chat room, good questionings, and very deep and intimate subjects. Thomas, thank you very much for joining and contributing. Bless your heart, brother. Bless your heart, brother. It's been a lovely afternoon. This has been Ever Beyond from JP on Wolf Spirit Radio. Thank you very much. Beyond.